Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is Friday, and it is August the 12th, 2016. The summer is flying by, and boy, it sure is summer in New York today. Temperature was about 100 degrees. That's not with humidity. That's just the air temperature. And Pennsylvania, from what I saw, was close to 105. No argument, we are in summer. Anyway, I hope that wherever you are, you're staying cool, that you're having a good summer. I thank you for joining me. And today, I will be having a special guest join me, my friend Don Rosenberg. I wish I didn't know Don. That's a hell of a way to introduce somebody. But the reason I know him is because his 25-year-old son, Drew, a law school student, was killed by an illegal alien who should not have been present in the United States. It was a motor vehicle accident. I'll let Don fill you in with the horrific details. But what's infuriating to me is that immigration for decades has been portrayed by the deceptive politicians, forgive the redundancy, who trying to placate the various donors, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and a cast of characters a mile long of people with deep pockets, no consciences, no consideration, and no compassion for Americans, have used the compassion of Americans as a way of defrauding America and Americans out of their share of the American dream, out of their safety, and all too often out of their lives. And that's going to be the topic today. But before Don joins me, I just want to welcome those of you who may be new to my program and tell you that I'm a retired senior special agent with the former Immigration and Naturalization Service. Ever since 9/11, I have been determined to get the word out there to as many people as I can about just how critical immigration, border security, the integrity of the immigration system is to America and Americans. And to this end, I've been writing for a bunch of great websites for a number of years. For years, I've been affiliated with Californians for Population Stabilization, capsweb.org. The website's a lot easier to remember than the name of the organization, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. Been writing for them for years. They're headquartered in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California. Great place to visit. But although the name California is in their title, the issues that they raise, the concerns that they focus on, are concerns for all America. We have 50, not four, border states, another one of the big lies being told to us. And so they've been beating the drum, and I'm proud to be a part of that effort. I write for them, where I join many other authors, many other people who have concerns about where we're headed. So I really would love for you to visit their website and visit it regularly, because every day they post new articles on their blog, new material, new information, stuff you can use if you want to approach politicians or perhaps win over a neighbor or a friend or a family member. We have to engage people in conversations. The nonsense of safe areas that we're seeing on college campuses is antithetical to the First Amendment. It's antithetical to the principles upon which this great nation were based. I'm a lifelong registered Democrat. I make no bones about it. My friend Don Rosenberg is even a bit further to the left of where I am. Because, you see, this is not a left-right issue. This is a right-wrong issue. I'm registered as a Democrat, but I'm a card-carrying American. This is about protecting American lives, the jobs of American workers, and the futures of American children and their children. That's what this is about. And it's not about xenophobia. America is the most ethnically, racially diverse country on the planet. I defy you to tell me what an average, quote-unquote, average American looks like. This is simply about a country finally being made to put the needs of its citizens first. What a novel thought. I also write for another couple of websites, specifically Front Page Magazine, sponsored by the David Horowitz Freedom Center, another great organization. I'm very proud to be one of their contributors, authors, columnists, whatever title you want to slap on me, that's okay. I'm kind of slap happy. And finally, I write for The Social Contract. In fact, I'm working on a major article now that will be out in the fall edition, and I'm calling it Immigration Fraud, Lies That Kill. So they also have been wonderful in providing me with an opportunity to get my perspectives out there that I hope are helpful to you. I've also become something of a regular on Newsmax TV. Dennis Michael Lynch has a program, DML, that's his initials, Unfiltered. And indeed, Dennis is unfiltered, and sometimes he's uncorked. And when you look at the madness, I can't blame him. He's a documentary filmmaker. I appeared in a couple of his documentaries. And then he's invited me to be on the program with him, and I'm always delighted. We just did a one-hour, one-on-one interview, he and I and nobody else, for a full hour. The video's available at the website. It's about getting information out there, folks. It's about being Mythbusters. And that's what this is about. That's what I'm about. That's what my program is about. And finally, my own personal website, Michael Cutler, C-U-T-L-E-R, one word, michaelcutler.net. So that's why we're here. That's what we're doing. I'm glad that you're joining me, but please get involved. The elections are coming. America certainly stands at crossroads. And with that, let me introduce my friend and my guest, Don Rosenberg. Don, thank you so much for joining me this evening.
Yeah, hi, Mike. Thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
Well, it's my honor to have you on. I was just explaining to the audience that I regret that we're friends, which is a hell of a way to introduce somebody, but it's the circumstances. It's the circumstances, not the man that we're talking about. Your son was killed how many years ago now, Don?
It'll be 6 in November.
Wow. I remember when we first started talking. I met Don when we were both on a radio show. I had never spoken to him before. And as he was explaining what had happened to his boy, I'll be honest, I was getting teary-eyed sitting here listening to the story, and I asked the host, and I don't even remember what program we were on, but I remember asking the host, can you put me in touch with Don? And we've been good friends almost from that point on. We did have a bit of an argument in the beginning because you thought this was purely about driver's licenses, and it took a little inertia, and I find this with many people, to expand the view from just looking at the issue of providing driver's licenses to the issue of who we permit to come into the country and allow to stay here, even when they violate the laws that were enacted for two simple goals, protect innocent lives and the jobs of Americans. So there was a little inertia, but you're a bright guy, and it didn't take long. And I don't remember if you called me back or I called you back, and I remember you had that moment of the epiphany where you said, you know, you're right, this is about immigration.
You know, well, you know,
I think I'm being pretty accurate in my recollection.
You're pretty accurate. I mean, when Drew was killed, we were originally told that the guy who killed him was here legally. So when I started doing some research, because he was obviously an unlicensed driver, and that's where I started my, it wasn't illegal alien unlicensed drivers, it was unlicensed
right.
drivers. And
right.
And I started to do some research, and I connected with a guy who, not that you'd know his name, but I can't put his name out there because I'm still connected with him, and he has some great sources that would be destroyed if I, you know, if anybody ever
right.
found out. But I connected with him and had found that someone in his family, not his direct family, but also had been killed. And when we started
uncommon as I wish it was, you know.
Well, the thing was, it wasn't let's put it this way. When I started doing my research, it became very clear that in the unlicensed, never had a license part of unlicensed drivers, it was almost exclusively people here illegally. But there were, you know, there were other unlicensed drivers suspended and revoked, whatever. But we, you know, and I even have, you know, there's emails to prove it, we talked about, and we said, look, in California, because we were fighting with laws that weren't specifically directed to illegal aliens, but that's who it really impacted, And we said, we have to fight these. If we fight it, if we fight this battle on illegal immigration versus, or illegal aliens versus just unlicensed drivers in California, you know, we're going to get nowhere. So we sort of decided not to do that. And I was the front guy. And every time, you know, between talking to you and then going to testify, and I was not testifying.
Tell my audience where you were testifying, by the way.
Well, in Sacramento, at the, you know, which is the state capital. And then I was also testifying in front of the Los Angeles Police Commission, and I testified in the Los Angeles City Council Public Safety Committee. I was actually called as an expert witness on hit and runs on that. But what started to happen was they're illegal aliens, you have to let them drive or they can't get to work, or they're illegal aliens and they contribute so much to the economy, or they're illegal aliens and they're the greatest thing since sliced bread. All of that was thrown back at me, and there is an email. I mean, I haven't looked at it. It goes back years ago, but there's an email between me and this guy where I said, you know what? And you certainly, this was after you and I had spoken, and it certainly helped frame my opinion of the subject. I said, this is all about illegal aliens. There are unlicensed drivers that are citizens or here legally, and they kill people as well, and they get in a lot of accidents, you know, collisions and things. But you know what? Because they're protecting the illegal aliens, they're protecting them too. The police can't go after them without going after everybody, but the police have been told by the higher-ups, let them drive.
Illegal aliens are sacred cows.
That's right. So it was like, so there's like, I can't have that argument anymore. And at that point, you know, it started. Plus, that's, you know, by this point, we're around 2012. And, you know, along comes the, you know, 744, you know, the amnesty, basically an amnesty bill. And everything that I'm hearing in my course of research, I'm going, that's a lie. That's not remotely true.
Are you telling me that the political establishment is dishonest?
Mike, I know it's hard to believe.
You're going to stop my heart. Wait, let me get my paddles out and restart heart.
You know, well, the thing is, you know, I spent 15 years as both as a publisher of one magazine specifically, but ran the entertainment group for a company that put on trade shows and published trade magazines. And the biggest magazine the company had was in my group, and that was the one I was also publisher of. And our claim to fame was market research. Now, I wasn't a market, you know, I'm not a market researcher by trade, but in 15 years, you learn a little bit. And you learn you learn what to look for. And you learn that sometimes it's as simple as just doing a little addition or multiplication or division of statistics that are thrown out there. And, you know, so I started doing that from scratch, and it was like this, I mean, I'll give you one example because it was so absurd. I got an email from a woman in Oregon who's very big in you know, the issue up there. And a guy had written a column in a newspaper, and he was talking about, you know, all the great things that illegal aliens brought to the state financially. And he laid out all these numbers that, you know, they contribute, you know, $8 billion a year in taxes or whatever. You know, I don't remember the specific numbers. But I read the thing, and I said, okay, well, let me, you know, he's citing Pew for some of his things, so let me use Pew's research of how many illegal aliens are in Oregon. Well, the bottom line is, using his numbers, every illegal alien, everyone, every child, man, woman, child, would have had to make $130,000 a year to generate the amount of taxes he was claiming they were paying. And look, Clinton the other day just said that, you know, they were paying $12 billion a year in Social Security. Well, if you do the math on that, and it means that over 6 million, it was about 6.7 million families, not people, families would have had to have been earning, you know, I was using the number from USC that's $30,000 a year. They would have all had to be earning that, and of course, paying taxes on it to generate that kind of money. So it means one of two things: the number's pure BS and was just made up lie, or that's
right.
the number, or there's 25 to 35 million illegal aliens here. Once you, you know, sort it out. So the whole thing is just one lie after another. And the only thing that's probably not a lie is that some of these people are nice people and work hard. But that's irrelevant. That's totally
irrelevant.
Well,
you know, that reminds me, when I was a kid, I had a real lead foot. I had a Jag Roadster. I used to get pulled over for speeding. And I remember this cop pulling me over on the Belt Parkway in Brooklyn. And I was hauling ass, you know, 23 years old and having a good time. And he pulls me over, and he whips out the summons book. And I said, "Officer, I wasn't tailgating. I've been careful. I didn't fail to signal." And the cop looks at me. He says, "You're right." I said, "Okay." He said, "I'm not going to give you summonses for any of those activities, but you sure as hell were speeding."
We're speeding, right? Yeah. So, you know.
And he kept his word. I only got a ticket for speeding, not for tailgating and not
right.
for failure to signal. And,
yeah,
and that's the point.
Yeah.
We've turned immigration into a no big deal. No big deal. And yet, it's remarkable. You know, Don and I were just having a conversation before we came on the air. It's no big deal, but yet it's immigration that was at the foundation of the ability of terrorists to come into the country and attack us. And, you know, with this all-encompassing fascination with the Mexican border, there was this passage, and this is the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. I just want to read two brief paragraphs. And I want you to emblazon this in your head. All this nonsense about what we go through to get on an airplane. We have 45,000 people at TSA, right? 1,000 standing around. I call them the terminally stupid administration. And it's not the workers. They want to just do a good job and go home, just like ICE agents do. You know, there's a Yiddish expression, when the fish goes bad, it smells from the head. But here's what the 9/11 Commission staff report says. This is about travel tactics by plot. Although there is evidence that some land and sea border entries of terrorists without inspection occurred. And by the way, that's the right term. They didn't enter undocumented. If I had a dollar for every lying politician, and again, forgive the redundancy, they entered undocumented. No, they didn't. They entered uninspected. And we used to use the term EWI, entry without inspection. For short, we'd call it an EWI. So if I was writing up somebody that I arrested, and we didn't need to get permission in advance, may I make an arrest? No, you may not. No, we didn't play that game when I started with immigration. You encountered an illegal alien, you put the handcuffs on him. If a cop sees somebody beating somebody up, he doesn't call the sergeant. "Hey, Sarge, some guy's beating the crap out of somebody. Can I arrest him?" "No, you can't." "Okay." No, it doesn't happen. We would arrest the guy. My boss might be walking by my desk. I'm doing the guy's paperwork, and my boss says, "What you got?" Then I might say, "Well, I got a guy from Colombia, and he's an EWI." That's all he needed to know. EWI meant he's a Colombian citizen who entered without inspection. So they used the right term. Although there's evidence that some land and sea border entries of terrorists without inspection occurred, these conspirators mainly subverted the legal entry system by entering at airports. In so doing, they relied on a wide variety of fraudulent documents, on aliases, and on government corruption. You think? Because terrorist operations were not suicide missions in the early to mid-1990s. Once in the United States, terrorists and their supporters tried to get legal immigration status that would permit them to remain here, primarily by committing serial or repeated immigration fraud, by claiming political asylum, and by marrying Americans. Many of these tactics remain largely unchanged and undetected throughout the 1990s, and up to the 9/11 attack. And here's the killer sentence. Thus, abuse of the immigration system and a lack of interior immigration enforcement were unwittingly working together to support terrorist activity. It will remain largely unknown, since no agency of the United States government analyzed terrorist travel patterns until after 9/11. This lack of attention meant that critical opportunities to disrupt terrorist travel and therefore deadly terrorist operations were missed. So this is now the report that comes out around 2004, Interior Enforcement. And what are we doing with Interior Enforcement? Oh, we've got to legalize everybody. Well, wait a minute. They just said that they're using immigration fraud, lying about who they are, claiming to be married when they're not living with the person, and so forth. And yet the politicians, who are literally so hell-bent on ignoring the laws, common sense, the well-being, and in fact the lives of Americans, are patently ignoring the 9/11 Commission report and the staff report on terrorist travel. See, that's the backdrop that I want everyone out there to understand. What I'm calling for, what Don is calling for, isn't the random, you know, lunatic ramblings of a couple of characters who are just miserable and don't like immigrants. We're talking about illegal aliens. We're talking about people who violated our borders, which are our first and last line of defense. And instead of saying, my God, people have come into our country, they don't belong here, and they're killing Americans, do something about it. That was what Eisenhower said. He was the general, right? Five-star general, supreme allied commander, becomes president. He finds out we have a huge number of illegal Mexicans. He called the program, believe it or not, Operation Wetback. He said, what the hell are they doing here? If they're here illegally, arrest them. And they actually assigned Border Patrol agents in Border Patrol cars in the 50s to go into places like New York City in those green and white cars, the big marked cars with the lights on the roof, and arrest illegal aliens. He said if they shouldn't be here, they're here illegally, get rid of them.
Right.
Nobody said we can't do that.
What a concept.
And here on top of it, they're killing people. And what are we told? Well, we have to show compassion. So tell me, Don, how much compassion did they show you when you went before those dim bulbs in Sacramento or before the police commission? I'm sure they were very compassionate to you, were they?
Oh, let me, you know what? You bring that up. The first time I testified, and we were just talking about impounding cars, had nothing to do with illegal aliens except for the fact that they wanted to stop impounding cars of illegal aliens. Now, if you were a citizen who didn't have a license, they would impound your car. But if you were here illegally, you wouldn't. They wouldn't. So a lot of people testified.
Do you think this is bad backwards?
No, it's incredible. Well, a lot of people testified. And when the hearing was, I mean, I knew we were going to lose. I had no doubt in my mind because, you know, usually you try to say things and be calm and whatever because you don't want to turn somebody against you. But it was very clear we were going to lose. So when the thing ended, or as the thing was ending, I asked the chair of the committee, I said, you know, excuse me, and she says, the testifying is over. I said, no, I don't want to testify. I just want to ask you a question to clarify something. And I could see she wasn't real happy, but she said, okay, what's the question? I said, I know you're the public safety committee, but are you for or against public safety? And I got an FU look. I got an FU look, and of course she didn't say a word. She just hit the gavel and said, you know, the hearing is closed.
FU as in funny umbrella, right. Okay.
Yeah. But at a Los Angeles Police Commission hearing, this was on what was called Special Order 7, which was basically, oh, let's allow them to drive without driver's licenses.
Oh,
again, I got up and spoke, and I, you know, kind of told my story and some other ones, and, you know, these people shouldn't be allowed to drive, let alone you're making it easier for them to drive. And I'm going to use the guy's name because he deserves it. One of the commissioners at the time, he's no longer a commissioner, was a guy named John Mack. John was very...
Was he the guy with the big rubber nose and floppy feet? Is that the guy we're talking about?
No, although you could call him that. He's probably in his late 70s now. He was a big person in the civil rights movement of the 60s. And he, you know, after I'm done speaking and one or two other people speak, he made a comment about, that was clearly directed at me, but he didn't use my name, that, don't you have any compassion for these people? Now, if it was today, because this was early in my career of doing this, had it been today, I would have gotten up. I probably would have gotten arrested and thrown out, but I would have gotten up and ripped this guy a new one. Because it's like, how dare you say that? My kid is killed.
Your son is dead, and you're supposed to be compassionate to the killers.
Well, after the hearing ended, one of the guys, and I'll use his name too because he's a great guy, the only commissioner, his name was Alan Scobin, the only police commissioner who voted against this, and because of the way I was treated at a police commission hearing maybe 4 months before, he was so offended by the way the president treated me that afterwards he said, you and I have to meet and talk, and we actually became friends. So he told me after the hearing, they go into closed session, and he said he got into a huge fight with John Mack about how could you say that to this guy? What is your problem? This guy lost his son, and you're telling him to be compassionate to the people who killed him? And
what did
the POS have to say?
How did he respond?
He just said he argued that wasn't what I was saying, and he tried to get out of it. But it was very clear that he was talking to me. And yes, how dare I speak the truth? How dare I talk about people who have been killed by people who you've allowed to drive when they shouldn't be driving? And even once they're caught doing something bad, you don't do anything about it. So the thing is, and you started on terrorism. And an interesting thing, because a lot of people don't, it's very easy to call you a bigot or a hater or whatever, but they don't think about the deeper issue. And you were spot on. And actually, I used some of the things that you said when they were talking about, this is way after what happened there, about giving these people driver's licenses.
Right.
And there was a big part of the argument was that the license had to be real ID compliant. And they ended up, I was against them.
By the way,
this.
For those of you not aware, Real ID was enacted in part because of the 9/11 Commission, because they found that of the 19 terrorists, or that the 19 terrorists, rather, in the aggregate, used something like 360 false names or variations of false names on driver's licenses and other forms of identity documents, whether they were counterfeit, whether they were altered, or whether they were legitimately issued to them improperly. 360-odd names and aliases used by 19 men, and the Real ID Act was so controversial. How in the world is that controversial? Can you explain that to me?
Right. Right. We want to know who you are. Oh, my God, how could you do that? Which is funny because the government knows who we, the citizens, are. But they don't know who those people are. Well, okay, so in the discussion, I'll give them credit that they said, okay, it must be Real ID compliant. Now, of course, when they tried to get the Department of Homeland Security, or Surrender as you call them, when they tried to get them to approve it, the design, they had, they basically had hidden everything that had to be on there. Long story short, they finally approved it's on there that, it can't be used for federal purposes. It's fairly clear. It's not that hard to see. Okay, fine. And you have to understand that getting a driver's license, the documentation you need, as I said in my testimony, if this is the criteria that these people have to bring in to get a driver's license, why don't you just accept luggage tags?
I'm actually going to be testifying before the state senate in Indianapolis this coming week, and I was thinking about getting an index card and taking a crayon and writing my name in crayon and saying this is my official identity document.
Well, California, you pass. not quite.
There you
but
go.
Pretty close. Well, here's so
I mean,
here's
is this
what.
Not crazy.
But here's where it gets even crazier. Okay, so. Maybe they made it. It's very easy to get to pass the criteria for. I mean, literally, a note from your church is acceptable. Now, forget whether or not the church is corrupt. how hard is it to create a piece of letterhead that looks like a church letterhead? Because they don't validate any of this stuff. And believe me, I've asked them. I said,
you're raising a very good issue, and this goes a little bit sideways, but bear with me just for a moment. Hillary Clinton wants to give amnesty to every illegal alien present in the United States. Now, look at the Dreamers, by the way, so-called children. They could be as old as 31. They just have to claim they came before they were 16. What does that mean? Well, there's so many applications, there's no interview, and there's no field investigation. So all the adjudicator does is look at the paperwork, and there's a checklist. Did they provide this document, that document, the other document? Yes, 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 and yes. Okay. Did they say they came here prior to their 16th birthday? Yes. Did the fingerprints come back? No criminal history. Yes. They're good to go. So, and understand, to approve an application, you can do it in under a half hour. To deny one takes days or weeks. Why? Because now, unless it's just about bouncing it back and saying you forgot to submit your Social Security card, whatever, that's one thing. But if they really want them to go out there and issue and do a field investigation, now you got to find an agent, lots of luck. It's going to take them a while to schedule it. Then they write a report. Then the report goes to the attorneys for legal sufficiency. Then you as an adjudicator get the report. You write a denial, which has to go to the attorneys for legal sufficiency, anticipating a challenge. So by the time you're done with it, you have screwed around with this damn piece of paper for how many hours? Now, what they do with the adjudicators, this is very cute, they most likely are telling them, you need to be super careful about immigration fraud because this is about national security. The 9/11 Commission warned us, if you're not careful, it's your rear end. They're going to hang you to dry. Be careful. Oh, and by the way, you have to move 12 or 15 or whatever applications per day. Now, what does that mean? It means if you deny more than one application a month, you're not going to meet your quota, which means you're not going to get a good evaluation, which deals with job retention, the potential for promotions, and the potential for awards. So if you want your career to take off, get out that approval stamp and beat the shit out of it, and pardon my language, folks, I just get so revved up, and just keep pounding away and approve those applications like Lucy at the Bon Bon Factory wrapping candy. So there is no integrity to the process, and everything they ask for becomes meaningless, and when immigration gives them their document, they can immediately use it to get a driver's license, Social Security cards, credit cards, and build a whole fake ID around a document issued to them by an immigration program that has no right to exist. And one other quick point I have to make, you said civil rights. Isn't it remarkable that everybody has been bamboozled into believing that illegal aliens are entitled to civil rights? They're not. And before anybody has a cow, I want to make some clear distinctions. I didn't say human rights, and I did not say due process. I said civil rights. Civil rights are supposed to protect an individual so that he or she is a full participant in the society in which they live, which makes sense. You're an American citizen, you have the right to vote. You're an American citizen, you have the right to be protected by whatever the laws are. You have protection at the workplace that you're not discriminated against. I'm 1,000% in favor of it. No arguments. But if you are here illegally, and that's why when I hear this nonsense, they need the car to work, they're basically stealing a job. The immigration laws were initially enacted to protect American workers. That's how we built the middle class. The Labor Department used to be in charge of running immigration. Why? To make certain that Americans would never have to compete with foreign workers for a job. Why was that important? It kept unemployment low. It helped boost wages. I have friends who are conservatives who are against minimum wage, and we can have that debate. But they make one point that sort of almost makes sense. If you had sealed borders and foreign workers could not compete with American workers, what passes for a minimum wage now would be exceeded on most jobs just because of supply and demand. This is like what we used to refer to as scab labor when they talked about workers that came in to break strikes. we are importing more foreign workers every month than the number of new jobs we're creating and what's happening to wages. It used to be that the people working in the meatpacking industry 20 years ago, 18 years ago, were making close to $20 per hour, which was a good living back then. Do you know that today those same people are lucky if they're making $10 per hour? How did that happen? Well, that happened because they flooded the industry with illegal aliens. Now they're flooding the industry with refugees and so forth. But the point is there are so many people waiting for the job.
Yeah, there was
I'm
a
sorry,
report
John.
Done. No, I was going to say there was a report done maybe four years ago. And surprise, surprise, the LA Times even, you know, ran a story on it. Of course, they never said why. The average this was 10 years prior to maybe the report was done in 2013. So it was the years, you know, 2002 to 2012, you know, plus or minus a year, depending on whenever this report came out, that over that time period, the average wage of a construction worker went from $25 an hour, which is pretty much, you know, if your wife is working, you're middle class family, easily, to $15 an hour. And of course they were, you know, they interviewed some people that used to be construction workers, and they said, you know, why aren't you doing this anymore? And they said, because I was making $25 an hour, and they now want me to make $15 an hour, so I'm not going to do it. And then, of course, not in this article, but then what is there? Oh, there's a shortage of workers. We have to hire illegal people. It's like, but that's what created the that's what created the wage issue. And I sent you, Mike, you should read this after the show's over.
Okay.
There was an article in the LA Times a couple weeks ago, and I just sent it to you along with that whole other email I was talking to you about before. And the article is about how garment workers in Los Angeles are getting ripped off. And I know what the LA Times meant, because they do this all the time. It was a Cry Me a River story to make people sympathetic to these people. Now, they never said that they were illegal until you know how these stories always start off with an individual's name to try to humanize it. So they were talking about this guy and blah, blah, blah. At the end, of course, they mentioned the fact that he was illegal. But the interesting thing in the story was how these companies, and we're talking thousands of workers here, not a couple.
Right.
These companies, they weren't paying them minimum wage. They weren't paying them for all the hours they worked. They weren't paying them overtime. They made no deduction for unemployment. They made no deduction for workers' comp. And, of course, they made no deduction for taxes, but, you know, what anything. So, and then they would short them. If the guy worked, you know, 40 hours, they'd say he'd only paid 30. And you had to cash a check through – you had to cash your check. They did write a check. But you had to cash your check through their check cashing service.
It's like that song, you lift 16 tons, what do you get, right? So you have to go to the company store, the company check service.
So, but here, this was the interesting thing. So you're reading the article, and you didn't have to read hard between the lines. This comes to your point about employment. And you know, the Times rarely will run my letters anymore. They used to run them all the time when I was
packing. I wonder why.
Bush and Cheney, but now all of a sudden they don't want to run them. But I wrote them a letter, and they actually said, "Oh, your letter's being considered." And then they never ran any letters on this subject. But the letter that I wrote to them said, "Do you think that when these people are made legal, and that guy walks into this garment employer and says, 'Hey, here's my legal papers. You now have to pay me this, this, this. You now have to, you know, do all these things.'" Do you think that any of these companies are going to do that? These guys were paying $6 an hour, which was actually less because they cut, you know, they cheat them out of hours, but that's what the rate was. And the minimum wage in LA now is, I think, 10 and a quarter. So these companies are going to go from $6 to 10 and a quarter.
No way. You're raising a great point. When we had the amnesty of 86, this is the advantage I have of having been an agent. I started working for immigration in 1971. That's why I've got all this white and gray hair, folks. And I began as an inspector, did that for 4 years. Then I was an adjudications officer for one of the 4 years doing the marriage interviews. And boy, could I tell you stories about that. Some were pretty funny. And then I became an agent in 1975. And in 1986, when the amnesty passed, the Reagan Amnesty, Immigration Reform and Control Act. And by the way, it's interesting. Everyone says to me, oh, Ronald Reagan says this was the worst mistake of his presidency. O'Reilly, and I certainly do not consider O'Reilly authoritative on almost any of these issues, to be honest with you. But he said he could not find any evidence that Reagan ever actually said it. And the best I could come up with was Ed Meese conjecturing. And in any event, politicians are politicians. He might say it, but he knew he didn't hire any more agents. But I remember that right after the amnesty kicked in, my phone, not my phone, but the phone in our office, all the phones, would be ringing off the hook. This was the squad that went out and arrested people in the workplace. It was one of the squads I was in. I worked in the frauds unit, and then I went on to become part of the drug task force. So I bounced around. But I was in the squad that arrested people who were here illegally en masse. We used to call it area control. The phones were melting. As soon as you got off the phone, you'd hang it up, bang, it would ring. You'd answer the phone, take the information, hang it up, bang, the phone would ring. It was nonstop. It was like working for one of these boiler room operations, you know, nonstop calls. And 90% of the calls were legalized aliens who had gone to work doing exactly what you're describing, going to their boss and saying, hey, Charlie, I think you're a jerk. However, I live three blocks from the factory. I like the guys I'm working with, so I'm going to keep working for you. Here's my Social Security card. I want to be paid minimum wage. I'm willing to work weekends, but I'm supposed to be paid time and a half for Saturdays. And the boss looked at him and said, really?
Yeah, you're let fired. Me guess. Right.
And so they were calling up to complain that these same factories were now hiring the next wave of illegal aliens.
Well, of course. That's my whole
point. And I made
the point
when I was on with Stuart Varney. It's one of these websites that likes to intimidate people. And ABC News reached out to me because I said that. I said once the employers knew they could no longer exploit these people and mistreat them, they fired them. So this guy calls up and he puts this article out there that I'm opposed to amnesty because it would prevent employers from exploiting their workers.
Right.
Now, I mean, this was crazy. And I said to the supposed journalist, so-called, I said, you're missing the point. It's not that I oppose exploitation. I do oppose exploitation. It's not that I'm favoring exploiting these people. It's that because they can't exploit them, they're going to fire them. And they're going to hire the next wave of illegals. And then the people that get fired go on unemployment. It costs us a bushel of money. And then they wind up in a labor pool that's indistinguishable from Americans. So now Americans who desperately need jobs find themselves competing with the formerly illegal aliens, and they have as much right to a job as an American who's desperate to support his family. He said, right, because they can't be exploited, and you were happier when they were being exploited. I said, that's not what I said. He says, well, that's what's implied. So I told him what I was really implying and hung up on him and melted his earwax. But this is the way the game gets played. So now you have Alan Greenspan testifying for Schumer, and I've often spoken about Greenspan, and I hate the guy. You know, I was on a radio show a day after this hearing. This is April 30th, 2009. The young lady who shows on said, what did you think of Greenspan when you watched him testify? I said, well, I knew I was witnessing the first. She said, you know, I know I'm going to regret this. What kind of a first? I said it was the first time someone testified while suffering from rigor mortis. I detest him. Because here's a guy who says this about immigration. He was talking before Chuck the Schmuck Schumer. There are two distinctly different policy issues that confront the Congress. The first is illegal immigration. The notion of rewarding with permanent resident status those who have broken our immigration laws does not sit well with the American people. He's okay with it, by the way. It's just the American people, they're just such sticklers. And he says this, in a recent poll, two-thirds would like to see the number of illegals decrease. But there is little doubt that unauthorized, that is, illegal immigration, has made a significant contribution to the growth of our economy. Here come the lies. Between 2000 and 2007, for example, it accounted for more than a sixth of the increase in our total civilian labor force. How many are flooding into the country, folks? The
right.
illegal part of the civilian labor force diminished last year as the economy slowed, though illegal still comprised an estimated 5% of our total civilian labor force. Unauthorized immigrants serve as a flexible component of our workforce, often a safety valve that when demand is pressing and among the first to be discharged when the economy falters. Some evidence suggests that unskilled illegal immigration, almost all from Latin America, marginally suppress wage levels of native-born Americans without a high school diploma and impose significant costs on some state and local governments. However, the estimated wage suppression and fiscal costs are relatively small. Right. Wage suppression is relatively small. When you're making minimum wage and suddenly they want you to work for 30 cents an hour below minimum wage, that's devastating. But Mr. Greenspan lives in a mansion in the Hamptons. So
right.
I'm sure he understands the plight of these people. He relates to them so well, just like Mahatma Gandhi live the way his people do. I know that Greenspan lives the same way. But then he goes on and talks about greatly expanding H-1Bs. And this was the point I started with, Don. This notion of shielding American workers is an intrinsic part of our immigration law. See, when they talk about immigration reform, they're not pronouncing it the way they really want to pronounce it. It's not reform, but reform, make over. Because their goal is to eliminate the shield. No, and I can prove it, because here's what he says. This is the benefit to many more H-1Bs. Greatly expanding our quotas for the highly skilled would lower wage premiums. Isn't that a nice way to describe a salary?
Right.
Of the skilled over the lesser skilled. Skill shortages in America exist because we are shielding our skilled labor force from world competition. Quotas have been substituted for the wage pricing mechanism, and in the process, we have created a privileged elite. How's that for a way to describe the middle class?
Right. Yeah,
whose
right.
incomes are being supported non-competitively high levels by immigration quotas on skilled professionals. Eliminating such restrictions would reduce at least some of our income inequality. In other words, Captain Kirk, shields down. We're under attack. The Klingons are firing on us, right? ISIS is coming for us. But put down those shields so we could lower those wage premiums.
That's Orwellian, if there ever was anything. And what's even worse about it is, the people that make those comments or the people that are acting on those things, like Zuckerberg, like Bill
Gates,
that they're sitting there behind their walled compounds, criticizing anybody who says build a wall. Which again, we've discussed this. To me, it just means security, whatever.
Yes.
And they're screaming that they can't hire people, which is clearly nothing more than you can hire them, you just don't want to pay them. That's why they want their H-1Bs.
Now let's look at common sense. There's a shortage of workers. Do you fire your people when there's a shortage?
Right, yeah.
Firing tens of thousands of Americans at each company. And by the way, if they're doing such a crappy job, why are they then being ordered to train their replacements from India?
Right, yeah.
And why is it that for 20 years they were doing a loyal job? You know, we both know our family backgrounds. My first wife was a systems programmer. She had her MBA in computer science. And I knew many, many programmers. This is more than a job. These folks are on 24/7 call. When the phone would ring at 3 o'clock in the morning, it was more likely to be her call than my call, and I was a federal agent. They're constantly going for training. They constantly have to work at it. If anybody is an IT professional working at a high level, if they leave the industry for 2 years and come back, they can't. It's like trying to join the marathon, and they're past you, they're over the horizon, they're gone. You're eating their dust. This is something where you have to stay current every single day. It's labor intensive. It requires great intellect, great talent, and great dedication. And they're taking tens of thousands of these dedicated, hardworking professionals and throwing them in the garbage can when they're able to find people from India. You know, if you fire an occasional worker, I understand. But they're firing people by the tens of thousands. And then they go to Congress complaining, we can't find anybody. And meanwhile, we have almost 500,000 foreign students studying the STEM curriculum in the United States, even as we're being told, our schools are incapable of turning out engineers and scientists. No, they're not. And then the same politician, if you're not careful, you got to listen, say, well, and when these alien students get those diplomas, we should be stapling green cards on their diplomas so they don't go halfway across the world. I got a better solution. Don't bring in foreign students. Bring in American kids, and then the worst they'll do is go halfway across town. And it's so remarkable because when Dianne Feinstein testified at that hearing in 1998 after the bombing at the Trade Center in 93, she talked very clearly about her concerns that we were teaching terrorists high-tech skills so they could better kill us, nuclear engineering and biochemistry. And now all of that's gone away because the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, working in cahoots with Zuckerberg and Gates and all these others, and the major corporations want to fire every American they can. Dan Rather did a story. It's worth watching. It's a video. And if you go to my website or capsweb.org, front page magazine, the social contract, I put these links out there periodically. Rather did a story. You can look it up online. No thanks for everything. Dan Rather reporting. It was on cable. The video is available. No thanks for everything. He interviewed four or five programmers who had worked loyally for Microsoft and other companies. One woman had her MBA in computer science, was a Phi Beta Kappa graduate, came to him from a Wall Street bank, and she was a vice president. Reports for work one day, and they tell her, oh, you're fired. What did I do wrong? Nothing. Here's a box. Put your stuff in it and get out of here. But we're going to be good about it. We're giving you a severance package, and you're being paid for today, so the faster you put your stuff in the box and leave, the better for you. And, by the way, when she asked for a letter of reference, and she even made it a chief of a division, she was there for years as a chief. He said, we're not giving you any letters. She said, why not? He said, company policy. Sure, because they want to expunge Americans from the industry. I was in the green room with this little twerp, this little kid that if he heard a loud noise would be sucking his thumb in the fetal position under the couch, told me that he hated to hire Americans, that he enjoyed the diversity of bringing people in from around the world. I said, you're destroying the careers of Americans. He said, who cares? I said, they had this program called the Hackathon where Zuckerberg was training young people to write computer code. The prereq was you had to be an illegal alien. He said, no, you just had to be an alien. I said, well, you're wrong, but why would you do that for aliens and not for Americans? He said, why should we do it for Americans? I said, why wouldn't you do it for GIs that came back missing a limb? You don't need two legs in order to work a computer. He said, who gives a crap about them? And I looked at him and I said, would you like to step outside? I mean, it took every ounce of self-control to not take this guy and stuff his face into the wall. Who cares about them? I said, them are protecting your scrawny ass. He says, yeah, well, if they wanted to do that, good for them. I have no intentions of helping them or any American. The more foreign accents I hear in my office, the happier I am. How angry do you think I was, Don?
I'm surprised.
How angry are you getting, folks, listening to this?
Yeah, it's pretty disgusting, the whole process. And when you see this,
and that's
look,
what Hillary wants to give us, an unlimited dish of this poison.
Well, there was another funny article in the paper the other day where, you know, I guess it was an attack on Trump and his immigration thing, but it was done I'll give the guy credit for doing it in a unique way, where he basically it was an op-ed piece where he was basically saying, you know, I don't see anything wrong with, you know, America. It's stronger than it's ever been. Things are getting better, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And the interesting thing was the picture that they used over this was a picture of the Santa Monica Pier, and then underneath it talked about, you know, look at all the diversity out on the Santa Monica Pier. Well, first of all, in Los Angeles or California, the whole, you know, the whole state, you could remove every person that's here illegally, and it wouldn't change the diversity of the state one iota.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's plenty of people that are here of every ethnic, you know, nationality known to man are in California. But what was interesting
or
about
New York, for that matter.
Well, pretty much, yeah. I mean, certainly any of the big cities. So, but
diverse country.
You know, but it's very easy to cherry pick things. And, you know, so he would cherry pick that, you know, the murder rate is down. Okay, fine. But using Los Angeles as you can see how great things are. Los Angeles is a nightmare. Now, yes, have some businesses, you know, built up some areas of L.A. that are gorgeous now and everything? Yeah, they have. But the city is constantly running a deficit. They can't repair their sidewalks. They can't repair their streets. The trees are on like once every 75-year, you know, trimming thing. Even though it's not an L.A., L.A. budgeted issue, the schools, which get more money per pupil than any other school system in the state, is constantly running a deficit. They had to make D a passing grade so they'd be able to get over. It's everything.
Well, let me tell you real quick.
I'm
looking at the clock. We're running short.
Yeah, I
see
we're running out of. Yeah.
Boy, it goes so quick, Don. I really appreciate you joining me. But here's the thing. In New York, Mayor Dumb Blasio was excited. He was wetting his panties because the kids in grades 3 through 8, the reading proficiency scores came in and the math proficiency scores came in, and he was excited about the progress we'd made and how we surpassed the rest of the state in New York. Proficiency of the average third to eighth grade, 38%, 35% math proficiency. And then I just got an email from a former colleague, a former senior agent with INS also, my buddy Tim, and here's the report. You're going to love this one. Now you know what's happening. Report, DOJ gave $342,168,401 to 10 states and cities that shield illegal aliens from deportation. Does it take your breath away? Talk about aiding and abetting. These are felonies. If you or I did this as civilians, I guarantee you that a team would come out and put you in handcuffs and charge you with violating Title 8, United States Code, Section 1324, aiding, abetting, harboring, shielding, inducing, encouraging, and transporting. And so the federal government sues Arizona for enacting laws that parallel the federal statutes.
Right.
But they give $342 million+ to sanctuary cities. Welcome to the Twilight Zone.
Well, and sanctuary cities. Let me give you one last thing that just happened. But let me
preface.
You got
30 seconds.
Okay. In Philadelphia, illegal alien, previously deported, arrested for aggravated assault or something. I don't remember the exact thing. ICE sends him a detainer and says, hold this guy. We want to deport him. And he already has an existing open deportation order, so literally he could be deported, you know, immediately.
Right. 2 seconds.
They let him out.
Wrap it up.
They let him out. He rapes a 13-year-old.
Yeah, we have another one like that. And I just did the story for Life Zet, and he killed his own daughter, a Brazilian. Don, stand by. I'll talk to you after the show. Folks, I want to thank all of you for joining me. You know, I always like to make the point that democracy is not a spectator sport, that we've got to get involved. The elections are coming. Please engage your neighbors in discussion, and don't forget the other elections for the senators and the members of the House of Representatives. We need people in Washington willing to put America and Americans first, and that's the short version of the story. I thank you for joining me. I look forward to seeing you again, same time, right here next week on the Michael Cutler Hour. Have a great weekend, everybody. See you then.